right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later in the show, we are going to be talking about some of the dumbest trends that ever existed on social media. And there are some doozies over the years that we will be reminded of. We're also going to talk a little vacation stuff, like the strangest museum in every state, the friendliest states in America, and tourist traps are just part of what's going on in the show this morning. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, I would like to welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we've had this guest on, a terrific filmmaker who has directed such great movies as Under Siege, Code of Silence, Above the Law, The Package, Chain Reaction, and of course, The Fugitive. And there's a special event made in Chicago, The Fugitive, a screening at the Music Box Theater. It's part of the Music Box, if you can believe this, 90th anniversary. Music Box has been around for 90 years. And it's this Friday, August 23rd at 7 o'clock. The director of that movie is Andrew Davis, and he's going to be there to host the screening, and we want to welcome him back to the show. Andrew, how you doing?
Wow, what do I say after that kind of introduction?
How you been, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me. So I want to say something. I looked you up because I was a journalism major.
Yeah.
And I see that you started with Roy Leonard.
I did. Yes, that's how I got my. I basically owe my entire career to the guy.
Yeah, well, it's I have someone like that, Haskell Wexler. But anyway, it was interesting because he was so kind to me, and every time I was in Chicago, I'd be on a show, and he gave me great reviews. So I see a connection there.
Yeah, no, he's the best. He really was the best, and a great guy, and I know firsthand that he loved your work. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, Andrew. You know, the last time I saw you, you came and see a play that I wrote and directed.
What was that?
That was when it was you and McNaughton and Fitzpatrick. You came to see a play called Black and Blue, which was about the Cubs and Sox fans.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the last time I saw you. It was a long time ago. It was about 7 years ago, I think.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I think my daughter had just started graduate school there at the time.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think we were talking. Yeah. We talked about that. Well, listen, it's so great to have you back. How about, can you believe the Music Box is 90 years old?
You know, I have to make a huge apology.
Mm-hmm.
When they called and said this is going to be at the Music Box, and I said, "Oh, I used to live right down the street from that." I got the Music Box and the 400 mixed up.
Oh, but my producer Tom,
then I have a way out. I have a way out because if he was a really good investigator, I said, "Yeah, I went to Field Elementary School." Well, that's two blocks away in Rogers Park.
Right.
Understand?
Right. Yeah. So, well, see, Tom used to work at the. He was a manager at the 400.
Well, there you go.
So the 400.
So I was basically I lived in Rogers Park until I was seven,
mm-hmm.
and I learned to swim at San Leone Park.
Oh, nice!
On the north side, and then we lived in a one bedroom apartment. It was tiny, and my father was able to buy a house on the south side, by the steel mills in Jeffrey Manor, Trumbull Park area.
Yeah.
So I became a Southsider very early. So I see you grew up near Wrigley Field. You know, we were Sox fans.
Yes, I know. Yeah, and like, you know, as I was telling you, Andrew, when you guys came to see the show, all three of you guys, McNaughton, you, and Fitzpatrick, were all Sox fans, and the play was about the difference between the Sox fans and the Cubs fans.
No, it was brilliant. It was really great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you. So, you know, I mean, yes, obviously, your Southsider first film, Stony Island. Tell me about making that one. Was that obviously a personal film?
Very, very. My brother starred in it. Well, I had seen Mean Streets, and I had seen American Graffiti, you know, and I was a young cameraman who was doing pretty well shooting pictures, and I couldn't get in the union. It was really hard to get in the union.
Yeah.
And so I said, it's easier to be a director than an IA cameraman. So I started trying to think, what can I tell my story to be about? And my brother was this kid growing up on the south side, 9800 Southeast, Eddie Verdoliak's ward.
Yeah, yeah.
and my parents refused to move when the neighborhood became mostly black. And so he grew up as a white kid in a black neighborhood, and he became a musician, and I thought that would be a good story to tell.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. Was it a fun movie for you to make?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a lot of work. We had no money. Everything was written down on a piece of paper. You know, there were no computers. There were hardly Xerox machines, you know. Mm-hmm. And so keeping track of information and raising the money was a lot of work. But we were able to put it together. It was a $300,000 movie in 1978.
$300,000, wow.
Yeah, and you know, we had to raise it. We had friends of friends, and even some politicians that got involved in it. You know, it was really interesting, and we were able to pull it off. And luckily, we sold it for near the negative cost to a distributor when we were done, which is hard to do. In those days, there were maybe 10 independent movies.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah.
And now there are 4,000 submissions to Sundance.
Right, right. It's a different world. Yeah.
It's a different world. So anyway, that was the calling card. It opened at the Woods Theater, played at the Three Penny, and maybe the Biograph, played in Hyde Park, played in different places. And the tragedy was that black kids started going into white neighborhoods to see it. And the fear, the racial fear at the time was, we don't want this to happen from the theater owners.
Yeah.
So they pulled the movie, and the distributor renamed the movie My Main Man from Stony Island. Tried to sell it as a blaxploitation movie, which it wasn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it got great reviews, and everybody did fine by it. Dennis Franz's first movie.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so it went on, and it was this calling card for a lot of people. And it's interesting because we did a making of a few years ago with Quincy Jones and a few other people who have connections to Stony Island, and you see what's happened to Susie Hoffs and the Bangles was the Richie's girlfriend in that story.
Yeah. Wow, it's amazing. A great snapshot of that period of time too. Really, you know, one of the things that I love about your movies is that you know how to use this city, and I mean that in the kindest way possible. Because I can't tell you the number of movies that are shot here in Chicago by people who really don't know the city, and I don't know how many shots of Buckingham Fountain we got to get, or you know, the shots of going southbound on Lakeshore Drive. Those are the things that you expect. But you use great neighborhoods and really great locations. I particularly love the use of our city in Code of Silence. Those were some of my favorite uses of Chicago. How do you go about picking where you're going to shoot?
Well, I don't know. It was like people live in apartments that have stairways in the back. If you're going to rob it, how are you going to get in and get out? You know, and you better be by the L. You know, we used to ride the L, get on at 63rd and Stony, and I lived originally on Lunt, right? So the L was a fabric of my whole life, and it's, I think ever my movies in Chicago have L scenes in them, lots of L traffic.
Yeah.
So you know, it just became natural for me to do that stuff.
Yeah. But you really do capture it, the city differently than pretty much anybody else. And I do want to mention really quickly, have I ever told you the experience of me seeing Under Siege for the first time?
No.
Okay, let me tell you the story, Andrew. For some reason, Gary Busey was in town. He was filming a movie called The Rookie of the Year, where the kid broke his arm. And he can throw real fast, so they became a pitcher for the Cubs. Anyway, Gary was in that movie, and I met him. At a bar one night, and ended up hanging out with him for about 6 days straight, which was insane. And I saw Under Siege
during your drinking days.
Yes, actually, Andrew. Yes, but I said this is the manner in which I saw Under Siege. I had hung out with him for a few days. I told him that Warner Brothers was screening it at the Esquire, right down the street from where he was staying. He was staying at the Westin, across from the Hancock, and. And he's like, well, you think I can get in? And I'm like, yeah, I think you can. You're in the movie. I'm pretty sure you can get in. And he's like,
he hadn't seen it?
No, he hadn't seen it. And he was like, I'll go with you. And I'm like, okay, you can come with me. So I saw Under Siege with Gary Busey sitting next to me, basically doing DVD commentary running throughout the entire movie. It was unbelievable.
Now, were there other people in the screening room?
Yeah, it was at the Esquire Theater. It was a packed house.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't like everybody heard him, just a few people.
He was just like leaning over to me going, no, you know, Tommy Lee and I, we improvised this whole scene. You know, he's doing stuff like that during the...
Yeah, it's true. true. We wrote it on the spot. Yeah, no, he was, it was interesting because you know, I gave him the book of the ship's book with all the history and all that stuff. And,
yeah.
And he's looking through and he sees all these guys dressed like girls. Right. So he says, Andy, got to do this. Got to do this. I said, cool, Larry. You know, Gary, we'll work it out. So the studio goes, oh, just a minute. You got to shoot this both ways. We're not sure about this. You know. So. I don't think we did shoot it both ways, but anyway, but right away it was a huge hit for that scene, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was a pretty incredible experience sitting next to him. Yeah, and yes, during the drag scene, he's like, "This was I wanted to do this. I wanted to put the dress on." You know, he was telling me the whole thing while it was happening in real time. It was pretty amazing. So, all right, Andrew, hang out, okay?
Okay.
Andrew Davis is with us. He's a terrific filmmaker. And when we come back, we're going to talk about The Fugitive. It is 25 years old. Fugitive is 25 years old. I can't believe that. And we're going to, there's a screening of it that Andrew's going to be there in live in person. It's this Friday, the 23rd at the Music Box Theater. And it starts at 7 o'clock. And we'll come back more with Andy Davis right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here on 720 WGN, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude till 5 here every weekday morning. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. My guest right now is a terrific filmmaker, Andrew Davis, and a great Chicagoan who has made such terrific movies as Under Siege and Code of Silence, Above the Law, and, of course, The Fugitive, which is having a screening this Friday night at the Beautiful Music Box Theater. And it's at 7 o'clock. And let's welcome Andrew back. Andrew, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So, The Fugitive, how did that one come to you?
Premiere party for Under Siege, Arnold Copelson, the producer, came up to me and said, I know your next movie. And I didn't really know Arnold very well. He had produced, he financed Platoon, and so he had a hot reputation.
Yeah.
And I got a call that Sunday from the head of production, Bruce Berman's, congratulating me, and I said, what happened? He said, well, Harrison saw Under Siege over the weekend, and he's approved you to direct The Fugitive.
Mm.
So that was pretty nice.
Yeah.
And Under Siege was a big hit for the studio that fall. So we were, Peter McGregor Scott, my dear producer, and I were in good stead. And, you know, we got involved. The script was in really pretty bad shape. It needed a lot of work, and Harrison had committed to it. And we started figuring out how to turn this into something that could be relevant today, you know. And I wanted Tommy to play Gerard, and that happened, and I wanted to go to Chicago because Harris and I were both from Chicago, and that happened.
Yeah,
and we were very. It was a very collaborative, wonderful experience because we had great support from the studio. We had a huge talent around us, both in front of the camera and behind the camera, and we were able to sort of do it on the fly, which I think gave the film a kind of energy that makes it what it is, because it wasn't sort of, you know, thought out in terms of every single line and every single shot. It was something that you sort of did on the fly, which gave it the reality that I think it has.
Yeah, and it's and the acting in it is just, you know, obviously at its core it's an action film, but the acting in it is just superlative. Everybody in it is so good, and I particularly like the stuff between Tommy Lee Jones and Joey Pants. I just think Joe Pantoliano is just a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned. And
Joey and I met when I was the first film I was hired on after Stony Island was made was by Joe Roth, who became a huge producer. Sam Arkoff was his father-in-law, and I did a little horror movie that Joey was in, and he played the bus driver and the monster at the same time. So we became dear friends, and he was in several of my films. You know, he was in Steel Big, Steel Little.
Right.
And it just, he's a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah, he's great to watch. He really is. And but you know, the Fugitive, first of all, obviously one of the classic scenes in the film, at least from our point of view as Chicagoans, as you shot during the St. Patrick's Day parade, you know, which is just like worldwide people know Chicago's St. Patrick's Day Parade. Tell me about the coverage on that. I mean, was it difficult to shoot that?
Well, there was a big chase through City Hall, and the Harrison escapes, and Tommy had to go after him, and we didn't want to, French Connection had been done by Bill Friedkin already. We're going to have another car chase under the L. So I had wanted to put the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Stony Island, and Richard died. Richard I died.
Right.
And his funeral is in Stony Island, but not the St. Patrick's Day Parade. So I said, why don't we have him run out of City Hall, where we're right there by the Picasso, and shoot the parade. And we got permission from the plumbers, and we got permission. We had just a few Steadicam camera and a couple of things running around, and we just grabbed it. We just grabbed it. And, and Harrison picked up a hat on his own. It wasn't planned. Put it on. And, we just sort of worked through the crowd.
Yeah. It's a great sequence. It really is. I would also, in speaking of The Fugitive, I would also like to thank you for casting Julianne Moore in early part of her career, because she's one of the greats, and she's really terrific in the Fugitive.
Well, sorry, because she was just on some big show. Somebody told me about it. And the thing is, poor Julianne and I had a tough time, because she was supposed to have a romantic scene with Harrison in about the 10 minutes before we're supposed to start shooting. We cannot do this. It's going to destroy the story of his wife dying.
Yeah.
And so she became the doctor who knows that Harrison saved a life, and he's under scrutiny from Tommy. She was terrific in the movie, but I think in her young career, she'd only done like a movie before that, in Cookie, I think, with Robert Altman. That she said, "Oh, I can't have a love scene with Harrison Ford."
Yeah. That was a little disappointing for her. How long did it take to shoot The Fugitive?
I don't really. It wasn't long. I think it was under 60 days, 50 some days, 52 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. And the and the bus scene with the train, putting that together, what was that like?
Well, Peter McGregor Scott and Roy Arbogast, our special effects supervisor, really were instrumental in figuring how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we knew what the pictures should look like, but physically getting it to happen and making it real. So basically, what we found is an unused rail line in North Carolina. It's the only thing in the movie shot not in Chicago. It's the dam scene and that scene.
Yeah.
And Peter figured out how to push an empty train. We took the engines out of the engine and push it from behind and have it derailed into a pre-made trough that would catch it.
Yeah.
And so, it was basically a one-shot deal, and we had 20-some cameras, and, many extra crew people came down for it. I was actually shooting the bus when they were setting it up. And then they said, go, and that was it.
Wow.
And it was there the next day as this incredible set piece. We didn't have to do digital trains. We could walk by it. You could walk by it at night.
Yeah.
And it became, and then later on, it's funny because later on it became a tourist attraction down there.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that's great. That's really great. So can you believe it's been 25 years since the release of The Fugitive? Man.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the picture's playing all the time. It's on television around the world every day.
Yeah.
And there's been this anniversary and that anniversary, and so it seems to be alive. I wish I could make another movie like that today, They don't make those kind of movies too much anymore.
Right.
But it's both long ago and right here.
Yeah. Well, it is a great movie. It's a timeless one, I think. And
thank you.
People will be talking about it on Friday night. You excited about being at the screening at the Music Box?
Well, a lot of dear friends and cast and crew members are going to be there, I think.
Okay, that's great.
It'll be a nice reunion for those people and for me to see them. And I'm going to enjoy, seeing the movie in a great setting,
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Made in Chicago, The Fugitive is being screened at the beautiful Music Box Theater. If you've never seen it on the big screen, you have to. It's this Friday, August 23rd at 7 o'clock. And on top of that, Andrew Davis is going to be there. It's great catching up with you again, Andrew. And have fun on Friday, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Nick. Good night.
Take care. There you go. Andrew Davis, everybody. terrific director. If you've not seen The Fugitive, you should. If you've not seen The Fugitive on the big screen, you must. And it's Music Box Theater this Friday night at 7 o'clock. You can go to musicboxtheater.com for more information. The great Andrew Davis. Okay, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. The news is up next.